I guess it looks as if you're reorganizing your records.
Yeah.
Chronological?
No.
Not alphabetical?
Nope.
What?
Autobiographical.
That sounds...
comforting.
Yes.
For the Record on Nova 103.5.
Have you ever noticed how two people can ask you the exact same thing, but it doesn't mean the same thing? For example, if I were to ask you, do you want heavy? You might think I'm asking you to maybe upsize your meal, or if you'd like me to share an overly emotional story, you know, heavy. But if James Hetfield asks you the same question,
do you want heavy?
You know it is about to go down. My name is Jacques, and spinning today on the heaviest episode of For the Record yet, Metallica, The Black Album. I feel like I'm about to state the obvious, but Metallica is a very big deal for me. Growing up, I spent hours and hours in my bedroom learning to play Metallica on guitar. I had their posters on my wall, I had all their albums, I saw them live. If there was something to consume that was Metallica-esque, I would. They're a super important band to me, and I'm so happy I could be sharing the Black Album with you today. Because if a friend asked me, hey, who's Metallica? Well, after slapping them for not knowing, I would shove today's album in their hands. Today, I'm going to be focusing on the five biggest songs from the album. They all got released as singles, but if you have the opportunity to listen to the album from start to finish, please do so. The origins of Metallica's Black Album started as early as 1988. Metallica were on their Damaged Justice tour, and they started throwing a few song ideas around. Nothing was set in stone, it's just one of those, oh, I better remember that, kind of moments. And then a few months before Metallica was set to enter the studio in 1990, they got together with vocalist and guitarist James Hetfield and drummer Lars Ulrich leading the charge.
When me and James get together and write, we just deal a lot with audio tapes from the other guys' stuff and basically just write songs around the main big riffs that we have.
Thanks, Lars. The recording process was a tough one, which is a bit of an understatement. It really took its toll on the band. What with a new producer, a new way of doing things, and personal lives falling apart, we'll talk more about the personal lives a little bit later on. The first single to be released off Metallica's Black Album was Enter Sandman.
Well, Enter Sandman was the first song that we wrote for this new album. It's sort of the best indication of where our heads were at in the summer of 1990 when we sat down and wrote those songs.
Despite being the ultimate riff master, second, of course, to Black Sabbath's Tony Iommi, it wasn't James Hetfield that came up with the riff. It was lead guitarist Kirk Hammett. Kirk explains when he came up with it, and he plays how it originally sounded.
Literally, it was at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Okay, so all the elements are clearly there, but it sounds off, right? Something's not right. So going from that to the finished product we all know and love today is, strangely enough, all thanks to drummer Lars Ulrich.
And then he came up to me and said, repeat the first part 3 times and then play the chords afterwards.
But Lars's work didn't stop there. James Hetfield backs up Kirk on Lars's involvement in helping out with the guitar on Enter Sandman, despite being a drummer.
Lars doesn't know how to play guitar. And he will arrange stuff and he'll just say, hey, can't you do that thing in another key? Something that I wouldn't do, you know, like Sandman, for instance. Then change the key. It's like, I wouldn't do that. I can't pick that. And then it'll be a challenge. It's like, okay, I can do that. So there's a lot of pushing of each other.
If you're familiar with the song, you'll know there's a kid talking at one point, but have you ever wondered, whose kid is that? And if you don't know the song, after the guitar solo, you'll hear a bit of an almost creepy part, where singer James Hetfield is teaching a child the Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep bedtime prayer and reciting a variation of the lullaby, Hush Little Baby. That was the album producer Bob Rock's son, and despite Bob Rock producing the album, it doesn't mean his kid always got things right.
If I die before I wake, pray the Lord my soul to keep.
He's hungry.
What'd I do wrong?
Shane, don't laugh at the poor child. The mixing of Enter Sandman took long. 10 days, to be exact. In case that doesn't sound very long, let me put it in perspective. It took them 10 days to mix 5 minutes and 31 seconds of music. The mixing process took so long because it had to be perfect. Enter Sandman was going to set up the sound for the rest of the album. We can talk about producer Bob Rock a little bit more later on. For now, the first song written, recorded, mixed, and the lead single of today's For the Record, Metallica's Black Album, here's Enter Sandman.
Never land. Yeah.
Enter Sandman of today's For the Record, Metallica's Black Album. So, Bob Rock, the guy we mentioned earlier, he produced the album. He was hired because Metallica was impressed with his production work on Motley Crue's Dr. Feelgood album. But something doesn't make sense there. Why would they want him because of his Motley Crue work? After all, the teased hair, the makeup, the outfits, I mean, just Motley Crue in general was everything Metallica was against. Right, drummer Lars Ulrich?
Motley Crue.
I'll take that as a yes. At the time, Bob was asked to produce Metallica's album, but he was also asked to produce close friend and Bon Jovi lead guitarist Richie Sambora's solo album. So how did he end up choosing which one to do?
So I ended up going on a vacation and with my family, my kids and my wife, we're going through the desert by the Grand Canyon and we're driving along. And there's this person on the side of the road in the middle of absolutely nowhere, sitting on the side of the road with a Metallica t-shirt on. And I went, that's a sign. About another 100 miles, I stopped for gas. I went into a gas station, paid for the gas, and Metallica were on the radio. And everybody had said they've never been on the radio. So that's when I knew. I phoned my manager. I said, I got to do this.
Okay, so Bob's producing, and he was going to change things up for the band. For a start, he insisted that the band start recording collaboratively as opposed to everyone doing their own thing in their own little space. He brought things in like vocal harmonies for James, and speaking of James, no one up until this point had ever said anything about the lyrics he writes. Bob Rock once told him, write better lyrics. Yeesh. In fact, Bob Rock altered Metallica's familiar recording routine so much, and the recording experience was so stressful that he even briefly swore to never work with the band again. Yeah, famous last words. Take it from Metallica's side, you busted your ass to get where you are, and now some guy comes in and says, do this, do that. Here's Lars Ulrich.
Halfway through the first song, he goes, how about changing the chords in that chorus? And I remember we all looked at each other going, excuse me, like, who the fuck are you?
Somebody say something.
How did you get in here? How do you dare suggest that we change anything in any of our songs?
The tension between Bob Rock and the band, specifically James Hetfield and Lars Ulrich, is well documented. James Hetfield.
There were a couple arguments between Lars, me, and Bob. Yeah, Bob gave up too easy, though.
Lars, what is your problem? I'll let you guys duke it out on this one, because I don't give a f-. I'm tired of arguing.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not.
But it was so necessary for Bob Rock to be there. Do not ever misunderstand me and get me wrong. I love Metallica, but Metallica were starting to sound a bit same thrash metal. That sound, mind you, is amazing and I will listen to it for the rest of my life, but still, same. The band, however, themselves did want to change. Lars and James.
We had finished the Justice tour about 9 months before and we really felt that there was something specific that we wanted to do, which was to sit down and try and write simple songs. Simple songs compared to what? I mean, simple songs compared to where we'd been before.
I think after listening to the Justice album, it was pretty apparent that we needed some kind of guidance.
Bob Rock was that guidance. Ironically, on a side note, after the production of Saint Anger, the fourth and final record Bob would produce, a petition signed by a couple thousand fans was posted online in an attempt to encourage the band to stop Rock from producing further Metallica albums, saying that he had too much of an influence on the band's sound and musical direction. Ouchie. The Black Album had a lot of different elements on it, or at least different for a band like Metallica, specifically percussive elements and, hey, what's that sitar doing over there? A song full of these different elements is the fourth single from the album, Wherever I May Roam. It was a clear indication Metallica was doing something very different. The song is amazing, and the intro, the more and more I listen to this, the more and more I want a sitar. Does anyone have one? Hit me up. Another musical element in the song, once the intro kicks in, is this weird, almost like cracking clang sound. Bang. Now, I got the album before the internet was a thing, so I had to wait quite some time to find out what it actually was. Lead guitarist Kirk Hammett and bassist Jason Newsted.
Oh, that crack. That was a...
That breath.
That's a six-string bass, right?
12.
12-string
bass. 12-string
bass.
Excuse my arithmetic.
That's something that needs to be addressed. We tried 8, and that wouldn't work, so we went to 12.
Like, crack.
That sound right there.
Yeah.
But strange musical elements and Eastern influences aside, the song also allowed James Hetfield to open himself up a bit more with the lyrics. And despite differences and headbutting, Bob Rock really helped. Bob Rock, and James Hetfield.
I just said to James, I said, you know, if we can get it so, you know, one track of vocals can sound great, people are going to relate to that. They're going to hear that that's one person singing it. And I tried to bring out the person, and that's, he ended up really liking the sound. And in terms of the relationship with James that I had, I think that really broke the ice.
I'd never be where I was today without his willingness to push me farther and get me to open my mind a little more about different singing styles, different microphones, different feels, getting into different moods and things like that with the vocals.
This wasn't the only song that allowed James Hetfield to open up a bit more. We'll talk about that a little bit later on, and I think you know what song I'm talking about. You know, the Metallica song that even your granny likes? A song about a drifter who just walks the earth and is perfectly content about being on the road all the time.
It became the ultimate road dog song.
Off today's For the Record, Metallica's Black Album, Wherever I May Roam. We'll be right back. For the record on Nova 103.5. For the record on Nova 103.5.
It's the best collection I've ever seen.
I wouldn't doubt it.
You know, I can only afford to buy just a few of these.
Give me 50 bucks and they're all yours.
Welcome back to For the Record. My name is Jacques, and spinning today, Metallica, The Black Album. Ooh, sad but true. That song is coming up nice and heavy. Heavy is one element definitely not missing from this album, but it also saw Metallica venture into a softer side of writing. If Sad But True is about as heavy as the album gets, and Nothing Else Matters, which we'll take a look at a little bit later, was about as soft as it gets, then this is surely smack bang in the middle of those two. The Unforgiven. I can find zero fault with a song. To me, this is a perfectly written song. I'll put it in my top 5, maybe top 3, any day of the week. Metallica took what they considered to be a ballad and they turned it on its head. You know how songs generally go from a soft verse to a loud chorus? Metallica's Unforgiven does the opposite. Loud and in-your-face distorted metal verses. When the chorus comes around, acoustic guitars, percussive elements, and if you listen real close, you'll hear some keyboards off in the distance. The intro is absolutely iconic. James Hetfield, the riff master. Who knew he was so gentle on the Spanish classical guitar?
Unforgiven's got a little Spanish classical, which is nothing new. We've used that thing before. It's real shimmery for acoustic. The other guys hate me for it, but I really like some country western stuff. And I wanted to put it in somewhere, and I did. They like it.
When you listen to the guitar solo by Kirk Hammett, it sounds amazing, but ish, the lead up to it, he was having a hell of a time getting the solo done.
The solo for the Unforgiven came about pretty much through the trial and error and, you know, creative tension.
None of this was helped by producer Bob Rock.
It's like he's got to eat, sleep, and breathe this solo until it's done. Songs like these deserve that, but it's just hard to sit here because it ain't gonna happen because he's got guys sitting down his neck. He's got to put some time into this one.
It took a million takes and a million different versions, but the guitar solo on Unforgiven was a turning point for Kirk Hammett. The eventual solo you hear on the album was a last-minute improvisation of raw emotion. All of the pre-worked ideas he came with to the studio got chucked in the bin, and Bob said, go. Pleased with the result, Hammett said it was a starting point of him playing less scripted solos in future songs. If you're a fan of the song, The Unforgiven, you might want to check out its sequels. That's right, a song has sequels. You can find The Unforgiven 2 from the album Reload. What I feel, what I've known, turn the pages, turn the stone. And The Unforgiven 3 from the album Death Magnetic. The song starts off with a very weird sound. If you've ever wondered what it is, it's the sound of a horn being blown. And weirdly enough, it was taken from a film also called The Unforgiven. The band essentially stole that noise from the film, but they ended up reversing it, you know, so no lawyers would come knocking. A song that deals with the theme of the struggle of the individual against the efforts of those who would subjugate him, of today's For the Record Metallica's Black Album, The Unforgiven.
We'll be right back.
Unforgiven of today's For the Record, Metallica's Black Album. The Black Album's success was insane. For starters, it is the second longest charting traditional title in history, only behind previous For the Record album, The Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd, and the second to spend 550 weeks on the album charts. It has sold over 31 million copies worldwide, and don't get me wrong, that's a very impressive number, but I find this little factoid slightly more impressive. Metallica's Black Album has never sold fewer than 1,000 copies in a week, and in 2016 moved a weekly average of 5,000 copies. Metallica, what was happening in 2016? Were you giving them away? But the album didn't come without a price, so much so that the band even had inside jokes about it. Here's a snippet from a Howard Stern interview.
The original title for the album was Married to Metal instead of the Black Album.
That was because three of us were getting divorced, and that was just a joke.
Drummer Lars Ulrich, guitarist Kirk Hammett, and bassist Jason Newsted all went through a divorce during the making of the Black Album. Singer and guitarist James Hetfield was saved simply because, well, he wasn't married. Hammett said this influenced their playing ways because they were, quote, trying to take those feelings of guilt and failure and channel them into the music to get something positive out of it. And speaking of the album name, I know somewhere a Metallica purist is pushing their glasses up to their face and saying something like, actually the album is self-titled. I mean, technically, yes, but also, technically, singer and guitarist James Hetfield.
The Black Album. I mean, it was called Metallica, but I always call it the Black Album.
The name The Black Album comes from the cover. The band wanted to keep it simple, so a black cover with the band's logo angled in the upper left corner and a coiled snake in the bottom right was the end product. The reason for this, James Hetfield.
There was no real theme to this one. It was simple black cover, and you had to listen to the music. You wouldn't be distracted by a drawing on the front.
If you give me a guitar, I can play you a whole medley of songs off the Black Album without ever leaving the key of E. Producer Bob Rock and the band, while in pre-production, also started to realize we're playing a lot of songs in the same key, and they're all off the same album, and they are back to back. After playing all these songs back to back, Metallica were about to launch into the song Sad But True when they thought, maybe we should change it up. But this is Metallica, and Metallica is heavy, and E is the lowest tuning, right? Wrong. Bob Rock, who had previously worked with Motley Crue.
Motley Crue.
Thanks, Lars. Bob Rock, who had previously worked with Motley Crue, had the band Motley Crue tuned down to D standard working on their Dr. Feelgood album. So Metallica tried it, and when Metallica did it, it took the song from Sad But True to Sad But True. If you have ever been lucky enough to see Metallica live, at some point in the evening, James Hetfield is going to ask you a very important question. And you know the grooviest, heaviest 5 minutes and 25 seconds of your Metallica life is about to start. I saw them live in 2006, and I was lucky enough to catch James Hetfield's guitar pick after they played Sad But True. Still have it to this day. Spinning off today's For the Record, Metallica's Black Album, Sad But True. You're tuned to For The Record only on Nova 103.5. You're tuned to For The Record only on Nova 103.5.
Yes, she's here. Bring it to me now. Thank you, Phil.
Why'd you get it sent here?
Carla wouldn't approve. She thinks it's dumb to spend $600 on an LP. Well,
Carla's right. Why don't you just spend $13 on a CD, man?
Welcome back to For The Record. My name is Jacques, and spinning today, Metallica's Black Album. We're finally there, the Metallica song that you can play for your granny, Nothing Else Matters. How is it that the biggest metal band in the world comes up with one of the greatest ballads of all time? I think anyone who's ever played guitar has tried to learn Nothing Else Matters, and every one of those people could at least play the first few bars of the intro, because, well, there was no work required. It's just a bunch of open strings. James Hetfield remembers how he came up with it.
Coming up with the main kind of pattern to Nothing Else Matters was more or less just a flute, just sitting around, I think talking on the phone while I had the guitar sitting on me, and I was talking and just started hitting these four strings in this certain way, and because they were all open strings, you know, da 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 da, and then it kind of, I gotta go, you know, and then I started coming up and doing little pull-offs here and there, and it just went on from there.
For the frontman of a hard-partying, hard-rocking, world-touring band, James really opened himself up when writing the lyrics for Nothing Else Matters.
Nothing Else Matters lyrically was, you know, being on the road for a long time and, you know, missing your chick at home, really, essentially, and kind of the distance and all the bond and all of that stuff, and girlfriends come and go, and the song still means something, though, to other people. It's a brotherhood bond, you know, it means something to the four of us together.
But James is just one guy. How was he going to bring this song, his heart on his sleeve, to the rest of the band? Well, he wasn't going to.
I had really no intention of it being a Metallica song. It was a song for me and how I felt, and it was really too personal for the band, you know. I didn't think they'd like it, first of all, and boy, maybe this isn't really Metallica material, you know. This is just me writing for me. I guess Lars or someone had heard it, and hey, that's good. It's like, uh-oh. Oh, wait a minute. Now what do I do?
A massive change for Metallica, aside from writing a song like this, was to add orchestration. You know, violins and stuff. So they asked none other than legendary composer Michael Kamen. And if you're thinking, wait, Metallica and Michael Kamen, something is ringing a bell there. Well, you know that infamous S&M concert where Metallica played with a full symphony? Well, for starters, the conductor for that concert was Michael Kamen. And even better, the concert was his idea. Michael Kamen remembers talking to the boys in Metallica.
You know, you guys are great. You should do a concert with an orchestra. You'd really love it. And they said, what, you mean a whole concert? I said, yeah. And they said, oh, well, we'll think about it. And we hung out a little while longer, and we had a good time, and then said goodbye.
And then 8 years later, it happened.
8 years went by. 8 complete years. And then the phone rang, and it was... my manager saying, I heard from Cliff Bernstein and Peter Mensch. Metallica will do that concert. I said, what concert? Oh, the one you talked about a little while ago. That was another lifetime ago.
Nothing Else Matters is a song that completely changed it up for the band. A ballad by the hardest rocking band, orchestration with electric guitar, James Hetfield playing the solo instead of Kirk Hammett. It's a lot of strangeness for Metallica, and it was welcomed by the fans. And not just the fans, within the music community themselves. No need for an introduction. Elton John shares his feelings on the song Nothing Else Matters and on Metallica themselves.
And listen, this is one of the best songs ever written to me. I mean, it's just...
Yes.
It's a song that never gets old. The chord structure, the melodies, the time changes. It's got drama written all over it. Metallica are probably the creme de la creme of those kind of bands. You can't really define them. They're not a heavy metal band. They're a musical band. Their songs aren't just heavy metal. They're beautiful songs. And this is such a melodic song. It's just... It's f***ing great, actually.
Sir Elton, I couldn't have said it better. Quite literally, because I get fired using words like that. If I've scared off your grandmother or the cat with today's For the Record, then now's the time to invite them back into the room, because it's time for Nothing Else Matters. My name is Jacques, and thank you for joining me today on this epic journey of Metallica's Black Album, one of my favorite albums, one of my favorite bands, an album that showed the world heavy metal is not a dirty little word. It's something that could be enjoyed by all. An album that has millions and millions and millions of hours playing on kids' headsets, on their radios, kids learning to play guitar based off this album. It really is such an important one, not just to me, but in the history of music. Let's do this. Ending today, here's Metallica, Nothing Else Matters.
For the record, only on Nova 103.5.